Radio crew, let's get to work. Hope everybody's well. Hope everyone's having a good week. This week's guest is Miss Laura Muggleton. Laura is a registered nurse with over 10 years of experience. She shares her experience as a nurse within hospital settings through both the perspective of the patient and the professional. Expect to learn the mistakes nurses can make and their implications on patient care, the reasons behind burnout, anxiety, and high levels of stress leave within the nursing profession, strategies to manage stress and anxiety within a high-pressure working environment, the characteristics of a highly effective nurse, the mistakes patients make when interacting with medical professionals and hospital staff in general, and of course, much, much more. Crew, for the past 2 years, medical professionals, including doctors, nurses, and entire hospital administration teams have been under more pressure than ever before. With the coronavirus pandemic leading to new challenges within clinical settings and some studies indicating that people are sicker than ever before, the impact on the mental health of our healthcare workers has been negatively impacted, to say the least. With reported attrition rates of registered nurses cited as high as 30%, there has never been a better time to dig into some of the challenges our nurses are facing right now and how they might be able to equip themselves in this challenging era of healthcare we find ourselves in. So crew, let's hear what one of our nurses has to say on the topic. Please welcome Miss Laura Muggleton.
How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I just had a pretty full-on day, but I'm just looking forward to hear a little bit more about nursing and the practice that so many people go into today with the vision of changing lives and helping people. So that's what I'm interested in. So in terms of nursing, talk to us a little bit about the mistakes that nurses can make. What are some of the mistakes nurses maybe don't think they're going to make and then they do make, or maybe there's something that a lot of new nurses make when they come into the profession? What are some of the big mistakes that a nurse can make?
Please. Well, I think it can be broken up into quite a few mistakes. There's definitely a lot of room for error in nursing, and it probably ranges from little insignificant mistakes to really big mistakes. We're handling people's lives, obviously, so certain mistakes can be life-threatening. I think probably the most common mistake would be medication error. That happens at many kind of points of administering the medication. So it ranges from making a mistake with reading the order or the way you need to deliver the medication, the name of the medication, etc. Most of it would start from a documentation point of view. So the way that the medication is charted, and a lot of the time we rely on the patient to provide the correct information on their own medications. And then we rely on the doctor to chart it correctly. Yeah, so when the medications are charted, they can often be written up as a brand name, for example, rather than the actual drug name. And if you're not familiar with the brand name, you know, you could potentially look to give the wrong medication to the patient. I think the most common medication error, though, would be around like dosage and its administration. So if a calculation, say, is involved, then there's more chance of error. But we do have things in place to kind of safeguard this. So obviously double checking certain medications with two nurses.
How often does something like this happen? So how long have you been nursing for?
I've been nursing for 11 years.
So in that 11 years, so I saw a quote the other day, which was, you're considered an expert after 10 years. So basically anybody who's dedicated 10 years of their life to something, kind of a weird thing, right? You're actually considered an expert in your field. So you've been doing it for 10 years. How often have you seen those mistakes being made in terms of drug calculations and or just misreading or not understanding what that off-label drug actually is. Is this a common thing? Is it very rare? How often do you see it?
I would say big mistakes in regards to medication are fairly rare, but ones that don't actually pose a risk to the patient would be reasonably common. Like you would might see one a week, for example, more, especially, with interpretation or like misreading the chart.
Gotcha. I mean, I'm thinking about medications in general. Like if you've got somebody, I don't know, on 300 milligrams of aspirin and you give them 500 milligrams, it's probably not such a big deal. But if you're dealing with like something more intense like morphine and you go and OD them on morphine, then, yeah, that has pretty serious ramifications, I can imagine.
Yes. I think like I can give an example of a mistake I made myself as a nurse in regards to medication. There was a patient who was needing to do preparation for a colonoscopy. So basically you have to drink this liquid that makes you go to the toilet. And essentially they were in with us because they had tried to do this themselves at home and ended up very dehydrated. Electrolytes were all out. So they brought them into the hospital setting to do it again. So that was a safe, controlled environment. And the mistake I made was just listening to the handover from the previous staff member. So this is where the kind of it began, the mistake taking place. And she kind of laid out what I needed to give and said it to me. And I kind of just took her word for it and I didn't read the notes. So I proceeded to give the patient all of that medication. And then it wasn't until I went to write my notes that I read what the doctor had written, and I'd essentially given them in excess of like double what they needed to have. So this was late at night, 10:15 at night. It could have had, you know, very serious repercussions for the patient. I don't know if you know a lot about electrolytes, but essentially if your electrolytes are out, it can cause issues with your heart. And so we ended up having to call in a doctor, a consultant at that time of night who was, you know, extremely stressed out, and then having to rehydrate the patient, put them on cardiac monitoring, and, yeah, it could have had really serious consequence, but also probably lucky that we picked up on it when we did.
100%. Do you reckon that a lot of these mistakes happen at handover? I mean, like when one shift finishes and another begins, I presume there's some kind of handover of notes. You've got a patient that needs to be, you know, handed over in terms of care. And you've got one nurse with, you know, their observations, their notes that is handing it to another one. Is that where mistakes can happen in terms of communication, do you think?
Definitely. But I think that a lot of hospitals, like compared to when I first started nursing, say when that actually occurred versus to now, there are things in place to prevent that from happening. So we now check everything at the bedside. You're checking their observations, you're checking their medication chart, you're doing all of that at the bedside with the patient, with the nurse who's coming on and going off. And so then that therefore decreases your chance of those mistakes being made.
What would your advice be to newcomers into the nursing field that, you know, you can give them to avoid making those communication errors and or just errors with drugs, errors with administration, that sort of thing? What advice would you give people coming in?
I think always if you're unsure, ask. That would be my biggest piece of advice, because sometimes, you know, you've just got to swallow your pride, and it might be something really simple, but you're always best to just ask whoever is more senior to you or whoever the nurse is in charge. If you think that you're not sure if you can understand what the chart says or how to give the medication, you haven't given it before, all of those sorts of things, then you should definitely ask. And I think touching on
a bit of ego there as well. Do you think there's a little bit of ego there? Like, I mean, I'm just thinking back to my own profession in years past. You know, you mentioned asking for help. I was one of those guys that was really stubborn. So I always wanted to do it. I always thought that I knew the best way to go about it. If somebody wanted to tell me otherwise, I'd just be like, look, that's fine. Thanks for the advice. We're going to do it my way anyway. And as time went on, I realized, you know, the error in that way, because when it did actually come to something that I didn't have any idea about, I wasn't the person to go and seek for help. So I think, as you say, being able to put your ego aside and just or swallow your pride, as you put it, I think it's so important, especially, I guess, perhaps more so with nursing or in the medical industry where, as you say, people's lives depend on accurate, error-free administration of drugs and information.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like compared to other professions, you know, where a mistake might not necessarily cost somebody's life, it's obviously, I think, drilled into us from the start, all through your studies and when you start off as a grad nurse, about no questions, a silly question, and that you need to just speak up and ask if you are unsure. I think when that's more in regards to more serious things, obviously each nurse is going to have their own way to approach the shift and the way they like to run, etc. But yeah, if you're unsure about something, it's quite serious. I think as well, like touching on new nurses as well in regards to mistakes that they can make in general coming into the profession. The biggest mistake that, and I think it's not necessarily just new nurses, but any nurse can make, is just being completely like having tunnel vision and being like task focused on the one thing that they are particularly dealing with. Like nursing needs to be like quite a holistic approach to care. So looking at the patient as a whole and taking into consideration all of those factors and what could be leading to what. Whereas a lot of newer nurses can be kind of stuck in that very task orientated, just following like protocol, following the instructions, and this is, you know, how it needs to be done. And that itself can be a big mistake because it's, you aren't looking at the whole picture. And if you're not looking at the whole picture when it comes to the patient, you're likely to miss things. And that's obviously where things can go wrong as well.
Laura, like you mentioned new nurses coming in and, you know, not being so awake to the broader picture of nursing and potentially missing things. I mean, I can only imagine, and I'm sure this applies to more experienced nurses as well, but I can imagine the stress that one would go under as a new nurse coming in going, oh my God, I don't want to miss something. If I do, as we said before, somebody's life could be seriously under pressure or, you know, at risk is probably the better word. So on mainstream media, I hear all the time that, you know, nurses across the country are suffering from burnout. And I think that all of those factors that we've just been talking about, the mistakes and the pressure situation of actually not missing a diagnosis, play into that. But why do you think, is there any other factors that you think come into nurses suffering from burnout across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is multi reasons why nurses suffer from burnout. I think it's all intertwined when we think about the pressures that you have on you throughout your shift to get everything done that you need to get done. I think the number one reason is a lack of resource when it comes to staffing. So you would have also heard that in the news, how a lot of nurses are under pressure. They're working with too high patient loads. And obviously the greater amount of patients you have, the more tasks you need to perform in a day, and you've only got a certain amount of hours to achieve everything you need to achieve for each patient. So that can also lead to you rushing and working like with high adrenaline. And I went to this leadership course once, and they talked about it in a form of like bubbles. So like when you are stressed, things are bubbling, and then they're bubbling. And then when you get to this certain point, you can't think. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. So if you're going around at this constant state of like everything overflowing, it's too many things to do, too many tasks to do, then you're not going to be able to think straight. And therefore, you're going to be more likely to make mistakes. And then you're going to be at more risk of burnout because you're literally just working in this state of adrenaline all the time. You're just running off adrenaline. And I think as well, to contribute to that, not only are you working in that kind of high adrenaline state, it's the hours you work. So also asking staff to do double shifts. So, you know, it's asking someone to work 16 hours, but also under that same level of stress for that whole time. And you've also got working extra shifts or working a late early where you might only have 8 hours between one shift and the next to process what's happened in that shift, sleep and come back and do it all again. So I think a lot of it is time pressure and the amount of hours that is expected of nurses at the moment due to shortage, et cetera.
Here's what I don't understand. Every year, hundreds of nursing graduates leave the universities. Where do those hundreds of nursing graduates go? And is the error in terms of staffing being a big issue causing or being a big factor in burnout? Is it just that the government won't pay to put on these nurses? Because surely there's not a shortage of qualified individuals to do this role.
I think here in Tasmania, we have a very difficult demographic. That's what contributes to our shortage, if we were to think of Tasmania, because in Hobart, for example, you've got the three main hospitals, two private and one public. And if you're a casual nurse, for example, which obviously fills a lot of the workforce when it comes to sick leave, etc., and that's obviously where the shortages can come from, there's times where there isn't work. So over school holidays, Christmas break, all of that, everything quietens down and you might not be able to get a shift for several weeks. So people aren't just going to be sitting around twiddling their thumbs waiting to get a shift, you know, inconsistently. Whereas if they are to leave Tassie and go interstate where there's 10 hospitals, they are going to be getting shifts whenever they like. So from Tasmania point of view, I think a lot of people go interstate. And then secondly, from the hospital point of view, especially more so in the private sector, because there's obviously less resources and funding for education and support for new nurses, you can't have workforce that is predominantly new young graduate nursing outweighing the more experienced nursing staff. So therefore you take on a limited amount of graduates each year so that you can adequately support them, but then you're still left with obviously a gap in your staffing.
Why is there a shortage of work over the holidays? Like, I would think that if you've got people going away on holidays, that they're doing more things, more activities to lead to more injuries, they're around more people, and in an era with communicable diseases like coronavirus and others going absolutely rampant at the moment, I would expect that there'd be more sick people. So how come it reduces in workload over summer?
The reason being is around elective surgery. So elective surgery is something that you elect to have done. So that could be something like a hip replacement, a spinal fusion, any of those sorts of things that are considered non-emergency but needs to be done. And so a lot of the surgeons who perform those surgeries, they themselves go on leave because they obviously have families, children who might be school age that are off during that time. And so they don't book any elective surgeries during that time. So that's how it heavily impacts the private sector, but it doesn't impact the public sector as much where they're always kind of at capacity.
Can nurses swap between the two? So if you have a contract in private, are you able to do like the equivalent of like a relief, you know, what's the word, on call? I don't know what word you guys use, but, you know, nurses that can be called in to fill a shift. Like if you're working in private, can you cross over to public and vice versa?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can just do whatever you like. You know, some people might work 4 days a fortnight at the public sector and then 4 days at the private sector.
In terms of your personal mistakes, Laura, you know, as I mentioned before, it's a hard pill to swallow to think that you're actually an expert within your field right now, having worked for over 10 years. But the fact that you have done that tells us that you are really, really experienced at what you do. What mistakes have you personally made in your journey over the last 11 years in the field of nursing?
I honestly think my main mistakes are not actual, say, medication errors or, I don't know, putting a patient at risk of infection by not washing my hands or something like that. My biggest mistake as a nurse is the amount of stress that I have allowed my role to cause me. And my biggest mistake would be pouring so much into my job and obviously wanting to perform, but at the cost of my own mental health.
What can you do to safeguard yourself in terms of your own mental health? I mean, there's a lot of nurses, we're talking about burnout before. What can nurses do to actually safeguard themselves moving forward? Because there's going to be so many, and there already is so many, and I know a few other nurses as well that are already suffering, that they're thinking about leaving the profession. And the last thing our healthcare system needs, I think we can both agree, is experienced nurses like yourself deciding to pull the pin because they're too stressed to go to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it needs to come at like an organisational level. So obviously I think organisations, whoever you're employed by, need to provide services so that you, like obviously the hospital that I work at, they provide a service through with counselling, etc. Or obviously you've got the option to see your own psychologist. I think that what is amazing tool, which I probably utilize the most in my nursing career, is debrief with your colleagues. So whether that's formal or informal, it's like any workplace or anything, it's unless you're doing it, living it, experiencing it, you don't understand. So being able to speak to a colleague and work through potentially what's bothering you or what's been difficult or stressful is a number one way to kind of get through a difficult time. Also, personally, like outside of work, obviously making sure that you have self-care, exercise is important to obviously burn off some of that adrenaline that is in your system from the stress of your day. And I think as well, I think you need to have an attitude where you realise that, you know, you can't be superwoman or superman, you can't solve everyone's problem. Nursing is a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week. You know, your 8 hours, you aren't there to just be able to solve it all, do it all. And I think that's important to realise that.
Do you think, this is a bit of a, perhaps a bit of a controversial question, but do you think, and I know that in other professions, there are people that are in that profession because they love it. There are people that are in that profession because they enjoy the way it makes them feel. There's people in that profession because they like helping people. There's people in that profession because they like making a difference in other people's lives. But do you also think in the realm of nursing that there are people that are there not for those reasons? And if there is, so for example, maybe they're there because the money is okay and they can do overtime and the perks to the job in the financial sphere. But if they do exist, do you think that those people aren't as affected in terms of stress and burnout as those that are looking to do it all and are not emotionally attached but are invested in doing a really, really good job?
I think when you go into nursing, you definitely couldn't enter it from any other way other than wanting to help people and want the best for your patient. But I do believe over time that some nurses do develop a, you know, couldn't care less attitude potentially, and they just think, oh, well, I just come here to get my money and go home. But I think that would be a more, you would come towards that. It wouldn't just be the reason why you entered nursing is because you thought you're going to get some, you know, all these perks or a really good pay packet. But yeah, I think it's more happens over time.
Yeah, interesting that I can see how over time when, you know, they're just so sick of it, or maybe they've been really emotionally affected and maybe it's their way of switching off from it and just going, you know what, I'm just going to come in, do my job and get out and not let it affect me in that way. But the scary thing about all of that is in the nursing field, is that we're actually dealing with people's lives, right? So if we're talking about, I don't know, you know, selling BMWs down at the BMW car shop, you know, it's not really a big deal if that customer leaves without a BMW. But if you, as the customer, proper diagnosis and you've actually got a brain tumor, but you said, I've got a headache because you can't be bothered pushing for further diagnosis, then we've got a problem.
Yeah, I think as well, like a lot of it comes down to, like they talk about compassion fatigue, and that's a real thing in nursing, is obviously in your role, it's a lot of understanding like the patient's kind of needs and being able to meet those. And obviously that's different with everybody. And it can be very emotionally fatiguing. Myself, I know I'm an empath, so I do just strongly feel with people maybe more than for them. So I think it depends on your personality. Like a lot of other people might just sympathize with the patient and say, yeah, look, that's really tough. This is what I can do. Whereas I will have so much empathy for the patient that I will come home and I will think, you know, I really want to know what happens with that patient and I need to follow up on that. And I wonder, you know, what else could have I done today to make that experience better for the patient or help the patient?
Yeah, that would definitely take its toll over time because there's so much just sheer emotional thought going on all the time and even kind of semi-subconsciously as well, right? Like semi-subconsciously you're thinking, you know, next time I'm on shift, are they potentially still alive or, you know, what's been the process or the progress with that client? You know, you're eager to find out all that. So there's kind of the unknown of what's going to happen and then thinking about what could happen. And it's just this constant sphere of worrying and caring about your patient. But, you know, I think just personal opinion, these are the kind of nurses that we need. Like if I'm a sick dude in bed, I don't want somebody cold. Like I want somebody nurturing. I want somebody to rub my back and be like, look, I feel for you. I understand. How can I help you? You know, and maybe not even that, just listen to the way I'm feeling about what's going on, right? I have a mate, he works in like scanning, like
radiology.
Radiology or radiography, whatever it is. And he told me a pretty intense story about a week ago. He said he was an old dude came in. Had a stroke, and basically his job was to get him on the CT table, do the scan, you know, see the degree of the stroke, the damage or the blood, the bleeding. And so he gets him on and, you know, he can see pretty clearly that this guy's pretty much on its way out. And so I think the old fella actually knew that that was the case as well. And what he turned to my mate and said, I just want you to hold me. I just want you to give me a cuddle. And so, you know, you've got, yeah, like a grown dude literally rolling over to this guy who's dying on the table, on the CT table to give him a cuddle. And those are the people that we need in these roles, is those people that are, you know, don't think it's dorky or don't think that it's, you know, unprofessional or don't think that it's, you know, a negative thing in any way, but the people that are going to, as you say, just have empathy in every way, regardless of what the situation is, right?
Definitely. And I think a lot of it as well just comes down to experience and even life experience, because I think my role definitely as a nurse has changed a lot since becoming a mum and obviously having other priorities. And I feel like in a way I actually enjoy work more now, not being in a leadership position where I feel like my only role is to go and look after the patients and feel satisfied about that and go home. Whereas prior to that, it was more about things outside of direct patient care that would be a large stress on me, and that's what can lead to the burnout.
It's similar to teaching. You know, the higher you go up in the teaching world, you find yourself removed from the core practice. So you find yourself removed from working with students directly. You find yourself working in small groups of people, mostly other adults. So you find that your impact towards the youth, which is why most people sign up to be teachers, that and the 12 weeks of holidays they get a year, you know, but that's very much the similarity, is that they, you know, as I call it rising to our highest level of incompetence. And what I mean by that is that you might be a really empathetic person and somebody that is amazing at caring for patients, and then for whatever reason, somebody in a position sees that and goes, oh my God, they're going to be amazing in this other leadership role. But the reality is that you're best with the patients, or that teacher is best with the students, and removing them from that context means that somebody else has to go into that context that isn't as experienced and or isn't as invested in the outcome perhaps. So I think that that's where we fall down as a society. We're always going, what's more, let me upgrade. But maybe we were never meant to. Maybe we were meant to be in the role that we're in for a reason.
I think, philosophy. Yeah, like, you know, I've kind of in this last 2 years of coming back to nursing from being a mum and being on maternity leave, like it is like I've come back to the core values of being a nurse. And then that's why I feel so fulfilled because, you know, it's not about meeting budget or, you know, the number of patients in beds. It's about literally caring for someone and making an impact when they're most vulnerable.
We spoke a little bit about a pretty sad story just before. How do you deal with death? I mean, it's obviously a part of nursing. You know, you guys are exposed to it day in, day out. What's a strategy that you can use to deal with, you know, tragic loss in front of you daily?
Look, I'm lucky. I must admit I'm lucky in the type of nursing that I have done to not be impacted by death as much as a lot of other nurses can be that obviously work in palliative care, etc. But I have obviously experienced death with a patient or several patients. And I think in a way as a nurse it is kind of a nice experience to be able to give someone the, it sounds weird to say, but like the death that they deserve, and that it be nice and peaceful, and it can be an honour to be there and help somebody to peacefully pass away. I think, you know, it's an honour to be able to be there for the family, for the patient. And yeah, like I don't seem to take it on as a deep sadness, like, but in saying that, I don't work in an area where there's unexpected death. Obviously that would be probably different if it was unexpected. I've only worked in places where it's expected death.
What do you think I really like what you said around, you know, it is an honor to be there. I mean, at the end of the day, you are potentially one of the last people that is going to have influence on their life. So it is a pretty special thing, I think. And I think that actually, interestingly, what you're saying has a fair few parallels with a doctor that I had on a few weeks ago who said something similar. He said that, you know, the doctor's job is to give the patient a good death. And it kind of sounds a little bit dismissive, but what it really is, I think at its core, is, you know, giving the patient dignity to go out the way that they want to go out.
100%. And I think, you know, it's a bit of a tricky one because obviously there's now, I think a lot of people think that now that there's the kind of voluntary assisted dying that, you know, everyone's got access to be able to just have a medication and go to sleep and be, you know, nice and peaceful. But to be honest, that's actually available to a limited number of patients, and most people who are towards the end of their life don't qualify for that. And so it is a tricky kind of line to walk as a nurse and as a doctor, because in a way you are helping the patient to pass away, but you have to be doing it in a particular way. And it's recognizing, you know, how can we do this within our scope that still allows the patient to be comfortable. And, you know, for things to happen quickly and not drawn out, et cetera.
What do you think makes a good nurse? Like, you're working with nurses all the time. You've obviously come across really good nurses and probably some that you aspire to be like. I think, like, anyone in any kind of profession always has those people that you look up to and do an amazing job. What do you think constitutes a really good nurse?
I think communication would be number one. So the way that they communicate with other staff and their patients, like at the end of the day, you've got to be able to get along to do your job. So the way that they communicate is very important. I think as well they need to be a good teacher. All nurses need to be able to teach regardless of how many years you've been doing it. It's about being able to be inclusive of new staff, teaching them things that you know, little tips and tricks. Friendship is very important in nursing, and so it's being able to build good relationships with other staff members. Like I remember obviously in my leadership role about the way I would build friendships and communicate with the staff, that would, it would just mean that when you did have to have difficult conversations, etc., with them, it made those sorts of things a little bit easier. I think a good nurse works well under pressure. You obviously don't, you know, when you're in situations, you don't want to crumble and go to the pack when things are coming, when things are getting serious. So you have to be able to work well under pressure.
I'd imagine time, like time management and organisation would have to be key too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like time management is paramount. And so a lot of what I teach new staff is around how to manage their time effectively, kind of like what order to execute their day to have the most success.
What mistakes do you see patients make when it comes to maybe receiving a diagnosis or even just in their interactions with nursing and hospital staff? The last time I was in ED, I saw a sign up in front of the screen that the triage nurse was working behind, and it said something along the lines of, you know, treat our staff with respect, like a fairly stock standard message that we should all know and do anyway, right? But what are some of the mistakes that you see in those realms of communicating with medical staff? Is disrespect one of them?
Absolutely. Disrespect is one of them. Sometimes it's not that they mean it. It's just what they can insinuate. I guess the most common one is when you get asked, how long have you been a nurse for? And sometimes, you know, that they're asking you that because they are questioning your capability. And then you give them the answer and it's like, oh, you know, bit of a shock from that. But they will also say that, you know, to the younger staff too. And so it can feel quite hurtful to have somebody say that to you. I think in regards to their diagnosis, I think a lot of patients think that they are invincible. And I think a lot of people go down the path of ignorance is bliss. So they're happy to just kind of know the bare minimum, do the bare minimum, but want the best result. And so a lot of time they don't understand that recovery is hard work and that they actually have to put in the work to get the result. It's no different to if somebody wanted to lose weight, you're not going to be able to do the bare minimum and all of a sudden be three dress sizes smaller. So it's no different to being a patient and you want to have a good outcome after your surgery if you sit around and don't do exercises, etc., that you need to do for your recovery, then you're not going to get a good result. And then I feel like in those scenarios, there's a lot of blame. And I think that comes on nurses and doctors. So we'll have a patient, they'll come back 6 weeks after their surgery and, you know, blame the doctor for how they're recovering. So they'll come back 6 weeks after surgery and then they'll blame the doctor for what their outcome is. So a lot of people don't take responsibility for their own health. You know, they'll walk in, another example, like a patient might just walk into a GP practice and just request a result, like a medication to fix XYZ, instead of doing the things that they can do to better their outcome, depending on what's wrong with them, of course.
I feel like I'm the worst nightmare for a nurse or doctor. And the reason I say that is because I'm kind of the opposite to what you just described. So I'm somebody that will ask way too many questions. So I get the look from doctors and nurses like, oh my God, will you just shut up and let us work? I'm that dude because it's just my curiosity. Like I have so much curiosity, like, hey, why are you doing that? Like, what's that? What are you doing that for? And probably my big mistake when I interact with medical staff is not just letting them work peacefully without interrupting them. I just thought I'd throw that in there because it's just a bit of self-reflection when we're talking about, you know, you've got people that aren't doing or asking enough maybe in terms of helping their recovery, whereas I'm kind of like the opposite. Like I'm kind of like, hey, I want to know every single thing that you are doing, especially if it's got to do with my son or daughter. I'm so protective of, you know, it's just a natural instinct that I want to know that they are receiving the absolute best care possible. But the strange thing is the nurses and the doctors probably know more about that than what I do.
There's that, and we're more than happy to, you know, tailor to those sorts of patients, but we can't guarantee that we won't talk about you behind your back.
Oh, 100%. I feel like that's been me a couple of times, but I'm happy to have that happen because I think, I mean, like here's an example. I remember I was at, like, I think my daughter had just been born and I was just shocked at, like, I walked down the hallway and looked in all, like, the I don't know, the little, what do you call them? Just like the rooms with, you know, mums and couples in them. They just had a baby and the doors open, nurses walking in and out. And, you know, like I'm looking at like what the dad's bringing in, and he's bringing in like McDonald's for his wife or, you know, partner, and he's giving his other kid in there like, I don't know, a V energy drink or something in the hospital. And I just can't help myself. I'm just like, what the hell are you actually doing? Like, we're talking about recovery for your wife. We're talking about the health of your kid. And so I become like the, I don't know, not like the bush lawyer, but just somebody who has a really strong sense of like, hey, you just shouldn't be doing that. And so I think like in one way, the nurses and medical staff like that I'm the person that tells them all of that, but the other way they're just like, this is bloody hilarious, we're just going to laugh about this dude.
Yeah, well, you're just being a patient advocate. That's what we want as nurses.
That's it, 100%. What about dealing with like difficult, psychologically challenged individuals that have maybe various psychological conditions? Like, I know they have special wards, mental health wards and so on, but at some point, surely nurses have to interact with these types of patients. Is there anything you can do to kind of make that process easier? Is sedation even a thing anymore? Like, I heard like back in the day you could put a needle into somebody if they were really erratic. Just hearing from people that worked in hospitals, I don't know if it's true or if they're just telling me that. Is that all something that actually happens?
Well, to answer the first part, I guess with the rise in mental health conditions, yes, it's definitely not isolated to a psychiatric ward. Obviously, we are coming into contact with mental health issues all the time, whether it just be anxiety and anxiety towards their procedure or anxiety towards their pain and having to have strategies to manage that. So offering support to the patients. And obviously a lot of patients are medicated prior to coming into surgery. They might already be on certain medication. A lot of the time we can deal with acute delirium is probably one of the biggest things that can happen to a patient after having an anaesthetic. So essentially that's just a temporary state of confusion or certain psychological behaviours. So the patient might become aggressive, or they might get up and be wandering around trying to escape hospital, all of those sorts of things. And chemical sedation would be kind of your last resort in those instances. And we essentially, you would go down the path of chemical sedation if the patient was a risk to themselves or to the staff. So if there was a risk to the patient of injuring themselves or if they were going to injure a staff member. But it's not like you would see, say, in the movies, they pin someone down and boom, like jab them in the leg with some kind of sedative. It's usually a much gentler approach, and usually it's the patient agreeing to taking the medication. We can't do something against somebody's will if they are normally otherwise mentally fit to make decisions. You could only do that if they had a guardianship in place or like a power of attorney who can make a decision on their behalf when it came to having to sedate the patient. So a lot of it is just behavioural management and also increased resources. So we might utilise something like a sitter where they have someone in the room with them 24/7 so that they might still be demonstrating the behaviours that are putting them at risk, but that minimises their risk of injury.
So just let me get this straight. You can be under delirium and they can't sedate you unless you tell them that it's okay to do so, even though you're in a state of delirium?
To a degree, but you can definitely change your wording around what you're giving them. So it's, yeah, as I say, it's not a case of pinning them down and giving them something in that sense. It is a case of, say, you were going to give them a medication that was going to calm them down. Like you might just say, we're going to give you this, it will help you to feel better, or you're a bit confused at the moment, or you're angry or what have you. And yeah, sometimes that can be a long lot of negotiations, but legally it's a form of restraint if you chemically sedate somebody, and there's legal ramifications if you were to do that without good reason or without permission from the patient or, say, somebody who's got a guardianship over them.
Sounds like a grey area. I hate grey areas.
Yeah, definitely a grey area.
Laura, you've been a fantastic wealth of information. Really appreciate you coming on the line and just having a good old conversation about nursing and health. And, yeah, I feel like I've learned something. So that's what it's all about. If I've learned something, I'm sure that some other people have learned something as well about an industry that we need, an industry that I feel is under a lot of pressure at the moment, especially with everything that's going on with the pandemic and all the strange medical things that are going on, and just the staff shortages and the lack of funding and everything that I feel is affecting you guys. I think the more light we can bring to you guys and appreciation is a good thing.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me on. I hope somebody can learn something from it.
100%, Laura. Thanks again for your time. Just quickly before we go, if somebody wants to reach out and just say thank you for the information you've given them, or just, I don't know, reach out and get in contact regarding maybe it's a new nurse that's listened to the show and they want to ask a question, maybe some advice, would you be comfortable them messaging you through a contact or handle?
Yeah, absolutely. They could message me through my Instagram at Mugglebop, MUGGLEBOP.
Fantastic. Laura, thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
Well, there you go, crew. I think the important takeaway from this episode is that at some point we will be faced with a medical condition or emergency where we find ourselves in a hospital or clinical setting. When we do, I think we need to remember the stress and anxiety our healthcare professionals are probably and currently under, and lead with respect. Other than that, crew, if you enjoyed this episode and are maybe not subscribed yet, please do hit that follow or subscribe button depending on your platform. It really does help us continue to source quality candidates for the show and just to keep us learning from the mistakes of others and their unique walks in life. In the meantime, crew, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Mistake Mastery for key mistakes from all of our episodes. Or if you wish, please follow me direct at Mr. TM Walters for other key insights. Crew, have a fantastic rest of your week, and I'll catch you next week. Bye for now.